years ago, when Heinz Kohut talked about the reception of self-psychology in the world of classical Freudian psychoanalysis, he said the reaction went in two stages. Initially, the classical analysts said, this obviously isn't psychoanalysis at all. Your empathic inquiry just deals with the patient's conscious, their subjectivity. Real psychoanalysis is all about the unconscious. What you're doing isn't psychoanalysis. Well, after a decade or two, when self-psychology became more established, and particularly when the clinical results of using Kohut's methods to work with narcissistic and borderline patients became increasingly undeniable, then the reaction from traditional analysts changed. Now they said, yes, of course empathy works, but we've been doing that all along anyway. Every analyst is empathic. You're not doing anything new. So first, it's not analysis at all. And then it's what every analyst is doing, right? And I always think of that in regard to Zen teachers' relationship to psychology. In the beginning, Zen teachers were adamant about Zen is not therapy. Zen is a technique for encountering a whole other dimension, a spiritual dimension of the absolute. Of course, people come with psychological problems, but we're not here to deal with those. And if a person has such problems that they are getting in the way of practice, they need to go see a therapist and get that worked out. Then maybe they'll be able to do this real practice. But then after a few decades, sometimes after the psychological problems of the teachers themselves became undeniable, the general tone changed. And lo and behold, the teacher said, of course, Zen deals with psychological problems. We've always have dealt with that. That's part of the practice. There's nothing new to try to integrate Zen in Western psychology. But when you ask them, well, how are you working with psychology? The answers you get are often evasive or rather superficial. What exactly are you changing about the way you teach Zen in light of what you understand about psychology? Sometimes you hear that, of course we work with patients' anger. When they're angry, just be angry. When you're sad, just be sad. That's the beginning and end of their psychology. Or there's a sense that anger and hurt or sadness all have their root in ego and attachment. We have to recognize that and let go of it, whatever that means. Or we're still going to wait for the Kensho experience that is the serve as the universal solvent for dissolving ego attachment, and then that'll wash everything away. Or sometimes we will encounter mindfulness or loving kindness practices that are an attempt to replace bad emotions with good emotions. But even though now, at least among the lay Zen teachers, a fair number of themselves psychologists, I don't hear very much about how they've modified what they do in their teaching, their training, or their sesshin in light of what they understand about psychology. It's one of the things we've tried to do here or experiment with over the years. Could we run a sesshin where the average age is over 60, in the same way we run one where the average age is under 30? Is physical endurance necessarily a hallmark of a genuine sesshin? How early do you have to get up in the morning for it to be a real sesshin? Or how many hours do you have to log on the cushion? Is silence essential? We know how it's always been done, but what are the reasons for doing it that way? One kind of experiment we run with the sesshins, I used to call no pain, no gain. Try to have a relatively pain-free sesshin in the sense that we're not putting physical endurance in the foreground. But try to foreground silence and unstructured time. Just being with this moment, whatever its content, not trying to do something extraordinary or difficult or painful, but just practice being present in our daily life without the usual distractions of our work or our phone or our social interaction. And it's remarkable how difficult it is for people to face unstructured silence, often much harder than it is for them to face physical pain and difficulty that they're used to doing from the gym. I don't have any final answer about these things, but I think we ought to be a generation that is experimenting and thinking about the assumptions that underlie what we're doing. Why do we do it this way? Who says? It's interesting in reading some of Lou Nordstrom's memoirs, one of the things he reflects on is the traditional koan about what does Avalokiteshvara do with all those hands and eyes? The thousand hands and eyes of compassion. And the traditional response in the koan is, it's like a man groping for his pillow in the middle of the night while asleep. Now we're supposed to understand that as a kind of unconscious, spontaneous movement. Just groping around for the pillow automatically, not with anything particular in mind, but just automatically responding to sleepiness with reaching for the pillow. It's a picture of compassionate action that he points out leaves out something very crucial. Emotion. Compassion is not what we usually think of in terms of feeling, of empathy for what the other person is going through. The whole example doesn't seem to have anything to do with relieving suffering. In fact, it seems like it's an attempt to find an image that can talk about automatic responsive action without gumming up the works with emotion. And I've often said that when we read texts about compassion in our practice, usually it's how we have to be compassionate to others and what that's supposed to look like. I don't remember reading anything about students needing to be on the receiving end of compassion or having a student feeling seen and heard and understood and cared for has anything to do with Zen practice. Usually the language, the old koan says things like, because so-and-so was such a strict teacher, his students were able to have deep realization. And often when teachers are referred to as grandmotherly, it's because they were so strict that they painted the student into a corner where they had no choice but to have some kind of realization or maybe break down and be carted away. Those are the other stories they don't put into the koan collection so often. Lu talks about all these years of practice with great intimacy with some of his teachers. He feels felt enormously close to Soen Roshi. Maizumi and Bernie all seemed to recognize that he was somebody special, valued him as a student. Yet whole aspects of who he was emotionally remained unseen. And it's not clear that those teachers would have known where to look or how to look. Even Soen, who was in many ways very warm and intimate, had this kind of otherworldliness about him, where everything was ritualized. Everything was, you know, part of a perfect transcendent world that we need. All we need is to open our eyes to this moment, the perfection of this moment. Well, somehow the abandoned child in Lu never was part of that perfect moment, was never seen in the midst of that. And I think he gives a wonderful account of how that finally came to him in therapy. But how is he going to be a different Zen teacher now that he's seen that? How is Dokusan going to be different? Certainly it would imply you want to see something more of your student than just the performance of an answer to a koan. But how? How do you make room for that kind of inquiry and understanding and sense of being seen? In many ways, I think this is all a work in progress. One of the things that we will talk about in the Sangha meeting, which I think has been a very good development, is the way more and more of you are running sort of peer-led groups, of discussion groups of one kind or another. Sometimes being seen and understood is going to happen much more from your friends, your peers, than it is going to happen with the teacher. We need to think very seriously about the role of Sangha in this idea of being compassionate towards one another, in creating an atmosphere of emotional understanding and mutual recognition as part of what we think Zen practice is. It's not enough to say, well, we're all psychologists now, everybody understands. We can't split those two things off. Well, if we really understand it, what are we going to do differently?